the O, and the Dub. Welcome to Junior, the CHL podcast with Jeff Merrick and Sam Cosentino. From now until the MasterCard Memorial Cup, this is the destination for news, opinion, and prospects. No one does the CHL like this.
Welcome once again to Junior, CHL podcast for CHL fans. Jeff Merrick along with you, alongside our good friend Sam Cosentino, lead analyst for all of our CHL coverage on Sportsnet. Sam, how are you today, sir?
Yeah, doing great, Jeff. Nice to be back. And another week, another cast.
Yeah, and another action-packed week full of guests and full of news. And quickly, before we get into the news and notes part of the week, which we kick off the podcast each and every, your thoughts on FNH last week, the Kitchener Rangers dropping a tough one to the Sarnia Sting. And I guess front and center, and we saw the good and the bad, as you and RJ documented during the broadcast, of Tampa Bay's first round draft pick last year, Anthony DeAngelo. There were some moments where he was the best player on the ice. There were other moments where he was the most undisciplined player on the ice. There's no denying the skill that this young man has, Sammy, but man, are there still question marks about him.
Yeah, there sure is. And you know what? You talked to Trevor Letowski and Nick Sinclair, and they both sat him down before the year and said, hey, you got to kind of keep things in check here, and we need you to be a good citizen and a good leader. And while he displayed some signs of that, the individuality comes out when, you know, he's taking bad penalties and getting frustrated, or when guys are chirping him or roughing him up after the whistle to try and get under his skin. So you're right. There is no denying the talent, but that's up to Tampa Bay. They knew exactly what they were getting into. They did their due diligence. They did their homework. And, you know, if and when he gets turned over to the American Hockey League and eventually to John Cooper, that's going to be up to them to figure it out.
No Pavel Zacha in the lineup on Friday Night Hockey for the Sarnia Sting. How good, and they played much better lately after a soft start, how good do you think Sarnia can be? Kitchener, I kind of see as being built for next season, but how good do you think Sarnia, and I guess Sarnia is in a lot of respects too, but how good do you think this thing can be this year, Sam?
Yeah, I think they're probably a middling team. I mean, you know, Jeff, we talked a little bit about it last week that I really thought that the power had shifted in the Ontario Hockey League to the Eastern Conference, and that's simply not the case. The power still remains in the Western Conference, and you know, Sarnia plays in the easier of the two divisions, but still not really any nights off. And so, you know, I'm looking at Owen Sound; they're always a steady team. And you're looking at that Midwest division that Kitchener, you know, had that point streak of 16 straight games, and Guelph is starting to play well. London's on fire again. You know, there's a lot of different elements going on there in that Western Conference. So, I see Sarnia as a middling team. I see Sarnia probably as a 7-8 team, not a home ice advantage team in the first round. But you get Zacha playing, you get DeAngelo at his best, you get Kurestelev when he's interested, and there's no question that they can be a dangerous team.
How good is Kurestelev in your estimation? He was excellent in the third period on Friday's game. How good can he be, and where do you see him going in the draft? I mean, clearly he's not a top 10 guy, but is he 11-15? Is he 16-20? Is he 21-25? Where do you see Kurestelev?
He can be a very, very effective player because he's got size. He's got an NHL shot and release already. And, you know, he's been able to trick goaltenders because there's a certain action to his shot that they can't quite figure out what it is, but it works. And so, you know, he has all of those things going for him. But you said he was good in the third period, and your assessment is bang on, but he was pretty much non-existent in the first 40 minutes. And obviously that's going to be the challenge for scouts moving forward. When it comes to his draft position, I think he's going to kind of be like a Goldobin. And when I spoke to a lot of people last year, they had Goldobin on the fringes of the end of the first round and into the early stages of round number two. And I think Kurestelev is going to be in that same area.
We have the latest edition of the Sportsnet December rankings up, by the way, at sportsnet.ca, penned by Damian Cox. And you can see Nikita Kurestelev up four positions in at number 24 on our list. You can see that one at sportsnet.ca. Sam, a couple of news and notes from around the CHL. We'll start with the Quebec League, where the rumors began somewhere in the early summer and really picked up steam in the last 48/72 hours, where it looks as if the Halifax Mooseheads may just, after all, trade Zach Fucale along with defenseman Matt Murphy to the Quebec Ramparts. Where there's smoke, there's fire. We keep hearing that Fucale to Quebec is a fait accompli, as they say in Quebec. What do you hear? What do you know?
So I talked to many people close to the situation, and the problem is this. Until December 19th, the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League can't really say anything about players that aren't European players or aren't overage players. So these trades get really goofy in the Quebec League, because what happens is you may have a deal in place that may include an overager or a European player, but may include other parts. So you're allowed to announce the part of the deal that includes either of those two groups, but you can't announce the rest of it until the trade freeze or the trade block is lifted, if you will. And that happens on December 19th. So how many times, you know, with social media and people with loose lips, and how many people need to be involved when a deal happens? At some point, there's going to be leaks. And, you know, you're bang on, Jeff. I mean, how early was it in the summer did you start hearing about this rumor with Fucali going to Quebec? It had to be, I don't know, June, July for you?
Yep. For all of us. I mean, I think you and I talked about this in Philadelphia at the draft, Sam.
At the end of June. So,
right.
You know, I don't think anyone's going to be surprised by this. You know, both teams have admitted speaking to one another. Go figure. But those are two pieces that the Quebec Remparts would need. And not that Callum Booth is not going to be a good goaltender, but that's a lot of pressure to put on a rink that's going to be full of 11 or 12,000 people every night when you're hosting the MasterCard Memorial Cup. And so you want a guy who's been through some battles. You want a guy who's won it. Fucali does that. It's his last year in junior, more likely than not. And then Matt Murphy gives him a little stability on the back end. So I would think that, indeed, this trade is has been completed, other than the fact that you can't really, you know, dot the I's or cross the T's until the 19th of December. So we'll have to, unfortunately, wait for the official word on that one. But
we await official word on this one, Sam. And when it is all done, do you now say to yourself, Philippe Boucher is done, and these are the Quebec Remparts?
Yeah, I kind of think they would need a piece up front. What this does tell me, Jeff, that especially if Murphy's involved in the deal, that there's probably no hope that Noah Hanifin reports to the Remparts after Christmas. And oddly enough, you know, another part to that is, I mean, you're really starting to hear things more than whispers now that Jack Eichel is going to end up in St. John after the World Juniors. I mean, I've heard that from a couple of different pretty good sources. And that would be, boy, wouldn't that be something?
Wow.
I mean, and then Hanifin is a guy that, you know, is obviously Rempart's property. Kamenev was Rempart's property. He's not showing up. And so, you know, if Murphy's acquired in this deal, that tells me that they're not at all confident that Hanifin is going to end up being there. And is he done? I think they probably need another piece up front, but I just don't know what they have left to give.
The word on Hanifin that I was told in the summer was that the Hanifin camp was, well, first of all, Hanifin grew up a fan of Boston College. Like, that was his dream all the way growing up. He wanted to play for BC, and that was going to be it. And, you know, he went through the early education process to make sure he met the criteria so he could play at BC this year. The second concern from that camp, what I was told, is it's his draft year. You want to have him in a comfortable position. You want to make sure he's getting minutes, but you also want to make sure that he's in a situation and environment where he is comfortable. And moving to not just another country, but another very distinct culture within that country, namely Quebec, would be too much of a challenge, maybe too much of a distraction, too much of an added pressure for the young defenseman, considering this is the most important year of his hockey career. I think maybe if you're a property of the London Knights or the Windsor Spitfires or someone else, there may be a better chance that Hanifin leaves after the World Junior, but given that it's Quebec that holds his rights, I don't think for a second. And then you couple it with the Matt Murphy situation, I don't think for a second that Noah Hanifin goes to the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League.
Yeah, it's funny, that, you know, the whole Hanifin conversation. Here's the flip side to that, Jeff, and you make valid points, and the Hanifin camp makes valid points. On the other side of that, as a scout, you're sitting in the three hole. You're not going up from there. Your only opportunity is to go down.
Yep.
And so are you confident in the player? Is the player confident in himself? And as a scout, I'd like to see a guy get put outside his comfort zone and see how he responds and how he reacts. And, you know, you go into that barn and you're going to be playing in front of a lot of people every night. Your travel schedule is going to be harder. Your schooling is going to be harder. You know, you're out of your element when it comes to the language, and that's what I want to see a guy out of his element like that, because there's no doubt he's going to be faced with adversity down the road. How well does he handle it now? And if he can handle that now, who knows? Maybe that really cements his spot as number three, because I'm starting to hear whispers now that maybe he's not that number three lock that everyone has him as right now.
I talked to one scout this morning, as a matter of fact, that said, I saw your Sportsnet rankings. You have Krause and Hanifin in the wrong positions, i.e. flip them, because that's where this one scout had them. Jack Eichel to St. John, hey?
Jack Eichel to St. John. And like I said, this just isn't just one person. I've heard it from three different people now and all what I would consider to be good sources. But that let me is... ask you this, Jeff.
Sure.
You think he plays in the show next year?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so why wouldn't you go and try and play a pro schedule for the second half of your season? You're not going back to school anyway, right?
Yep, 100%.
That makes sense.
If you're going to be a one and done anyhow, why not and go and test it in a situation that most replicates that of an NHL schedule? So that'll be and that's an interesting team to go to as well, considering it's a good, really good team right now. Surprising in the Maritimes division, surprising in the CHL top 10. No one thought the Sea Dogs were going to be this good this fast, because when you look at it, this team isn't being constructed for this year. It's not even being constructed for next year. When the MasterCard Memorial Cup is in Red Deer. This is the team that's being built for a couple of years down the road when they bid for the MasterCard Memorial Cup.
Yeah, Darryl Young.
Eichel, all of a sudden to this team adds a whole new wrinkle in that situation.
Oh, I mean, to me, I would have to put them as the league favorite, because here's the other element to that, Jeff. You know, if the Fucali thing actually happens and he goes to Quebec, Sebastian Ogier was a guy that I thought Darryl Young was going to have a huge piece to move and get tons and tons back to really build for 2017. I've been told now that that's not going to happen, that Ogier is going to remain there as an overage goaltender. So that tells me that they're not quite ready to pack it in and put this year aside. That, you know, I mean, if that guy shows up after Christmas, look out. To me, they might be the best team in the league.
And then it gets really interesting if the Erie Otters win the J. Ross Robertson Cup and all of a sudden the Presidents is absorbed by the St. John Sea Dogs. And we head into Quebec City, Sam, with another Connor McDavid, Jack Eichel showdown. And you can already hear them drooling at the offices of the Canadian Hockey League.
Yeah, at the offices of Sportsnet in my home office. That's true. That's in your home office. Who are you kidding?
Should be thinking selfishly, shouldn't we? A couple other interesting notes around the CHL. The Calgary Hitmen making what they thought was going to be a quiet deal yesterday. When you consider the player involved, they shouldn't be surprised it turned into a loud deal. The rights of Thatcher Demko, second-round pick of the Vancouver Canucks. The rights trader from the Spokane Chiefs to the Calgary Hitmen. Now, Mike Moore, who's the general manager of the Hitmen, was on the Fan 960 yesterday talking to Rob Kerr. Let's play a little bit of this conversation, Sam. We'll come back and comment on it. But here's Hitmen general manager Mike Moore talking to Rob Kerr about the Thatcher Demko deal from yesterday.
We don't have any indication that he's coming.
Okay.
Last year when we traded for Adam Tambellini, we had a pretty good feel that Adam was coming and wanted to come out. We had to do some work with him, but... with Thatcher, I've had one conversation with him, and Spokane's tried for 3 years to try and get him out. Our angle was, you know what, we have a good hockey team here, we got good goaltending, but we don't. He's a world class goaltender,
yep.
And if you can get him out, great. He's a second round pick to Vancouver, as you alluded to. Jake Bertan is a first round pick connection there. Vancouver's obviously worked with us because of Bertan, and have not had conversations with Vancouver yet, but. Yeah, I think the frenzy that's created this afternoon certainly isn't the one that we anticipated or expected or, quite frankly, think is warranted yet, because this is a long shot still, and it's up to him whether he wants to come out. And he's now today day one of World Junior Camp with Team USA, so he won't be focusing on the Calgary Hitmen or the Western Hockey League between now and January 5th. After that, we've got a short window to see if he has any idea or inkling of making a move.
But just to clarify, this would fall into the category of taking a flyer on a player?
More or less, yes. I mean,
okay.
we had a little bit of intel that there's a possibility that there was some thought of maybe looking at Major Junior, but very little intel. And it's a flyer for sure. He goes to our college list. We don't pay anything unless we get him out. So it's why not? And
right.
See
all
what
the
happens.
Picks are conditional, right?
Just absolutely. Yeah.
This is an interesting part of what you do, because there's the scouting, and we get so focused on bantams and other things. But this is kind of the turning over of rocks that general managers do, right?
It is. We and it's a strategy that some teams have taken. Portland has a number of U.S. kids. Other teams in the league have a certain amount of U.S. kids. In our draft year last year, we didn't have the first rounder because of the Adam Tambellini trade. Right. We had a second and a third, and we took two U.S. kids, which is a bit of a risk because you're not sure they're coming. We had done a fair amount of homework on them. Both have signed contracts. Both are terrific players, and we expect both to compete for jobs next year. So, yeah, it's a strategy. It's turning over rocks. It's taking a flyer here and there, and when one comes in, it really adds to your hockey team, whether it's Adam Tambellini or whether it's Thatcher Demko.
With this story gaining some traction like it has, at least notoriety this afternoon, do you have to do anything with your current goaltenders? I mean, is there a concern about that getting in your dressing room?
That's a real good point, Robin, and I think it's important to state that our goaltending's been very good. Max Shields has been terrific for us. I had a good chat with Mac today and explained to him that this was a flyer and this was a general manager's way of potentially making your hockey team better with a very good tandem. Evan Johnson's a rookie. Evan's working hard and getting better by the day. But again, it's the business, and you try to make your hockey team better. But Max Shields has been absolutely wonderful for us, and part of, I think we're 16 points in our last 20 games. We're on a five-game winning streak, and a big part of it's the way Max playing.
Are you limited by any bylaws or restraints in terms of how much you said you did talk to Thatcher today? Are you limited in that area at all?
We are limited during World Junior or World events under 17. We can't talk to players. We stay away from them. It's the right thing to do. They've got to focus on the tournament and making the team, whether it's Jake Virtanen or Travis Sanheim when he's there or Thatcher Demko. So, yeah, we will give him complete room and not have a conversation with him over the tournament. He has a family advisor that I've reached out to as well, so made that contact. So if there is any communication that has to happen, it would be between us.
Okay, I was just going to ask you, the family advisor, though, would also know that you guys have done this and you'd be in contact with them.
Yeah, it's important to have all the lines of communication open. The only one that hasn't happened yet is Vancouver again. I didn't expect the furor that's created today, but we will have that conversation with Vancouver in time.
This is all because of the quality of the player, you think? You know, you didn't anticipate this. When we talked only a couple hours ago, and it's kind of interesting, and now it's kind of taken on a life of its own.
Well, he's been on a list for 3 years with Spokane, and Spokane's a terrific hockey team.
Absolutely,
and organization,
yeah.
And done a lot of work with them and built some rapport. So what can we do different than Spokane? I'm not sure if it's that much, but it's a flyer. It's a potential opportunity for Spokane to get some assets out of something they couldn't get him out, and if we get him out, both teams are happy. And but it's really Thatcher's choice, obviously, and his decision, and his advisor and the Canucks, and we'll help him through that decision making. But and it doesn't have to be for this year. We could get him next year as a 20-year-old too, so there's some time on this as well.
Interesting kid too, because he's at Boston College, but he's actually from San Diego. He's part of that California surge of players.
Yeah, when I chatted with him the other day, I told him I was going to be visiting his hometown here over the Christmas break. I've got the family going down there, so it's kind of a unique twist on the thing. But yeah, there's been some real good players out of California. We took another player who will be up here for Christmas holidays and going to skate with our team for one day from California. So it's been a nice influx of those kids in that state.
Well, Sam, smoke, fire. We talked about that with Zach Fucali. I think the more interesting comments out of all that, Rob Kerr saying this is sort of the idea of taking a flyer on a player. But when the general manager said we had some intel that indicated he may want to consider Major Junior, how much do your ears go up for the Calgary Hitmen picking up the number one goaltender from Boston College?
That was the key for me. We've had some intel, and as soon as he said that, I don't care if he said it was a little, a lot, the fact that they have any intelligence at all says to me that they think there's a better than 50% chance that he ends up showing up. So that is just fascinating to me. I mean, I think the Calgary Hitmen, you know, they've just really started to adjust to Mark French. I talked to Jake Virtanen a little bit yesterday about Mark coming in there and just how he's really kind of gotten things on the right track, and it's taken a little while for the players to adjust, but that would be a real nice piece to have back there. Oh, man. And, you know, they've always predicated their success built on goaltending and defense, and this would be a big piece to move to that end.
It certainly would. Moving along, speaking of deals, the Red Deer Rebels, they are poised for a run next season when they host the MasterCard Memorial Cup, a deal with the Saskatoon Blaze. Nelson Noget, Austin Adaman, as well, an 18-year-old and a 17-year-old, head to Red Deer. So that team gets even stronger for next season, Sam. And already they'll have Connor Blakely, they'll have Adam Musil and Hayden Fleury and Tyler Sandu. Your thoughts on what Brent Sutter's team did this week?
Yeah, I like when you start thinking ahead a little bit. I mean, it's not that it's going to hurt them now either. I mean, I think when it comes to Nogé, he's been in a real interesting spot in Saskatoon, and I'm not so sure that he's been able to really just kind of let go and relax and play his game. And maybe now in Red Deer, he's going to have the opportunity to do that. But two huge pieces on the back end with he and Fleury to kind of anchor that back end, I think is going to be really key for Red Deer moving forward. And there's nothing wrong that as long as you're not absolutely decimating your team's chances this year to build ahead for the MasterCard Memorial Cup. I mean, that's why part of the reason why we know the hosts so far out is so that clubs have the opportunity to do this. I mean, if you think back to Saskatoon, they made a trade the year before they found out they were hosting that involved Braden Shen and pretty much all their future going to Brandon. And yep. As a result of that, that kind of killed their chances and really depleted their assets to be able to do things in the year in which they were hosting. And then by that time, you know, they were mortgaging 3 and 4 years and 5 years down the road with first-round picks and all that. Now, Bob Woods has come back and started to replenish some of that. But, man, this is going to end up being a 3 or 4 year process before they get back into being a playoff contention team, and I know Brent Sutter doesn't want to do that.
Yeah, how terrifying is it? And we see Quebec loading up. Certainly, we started to see the beginning of that in the summer this year. Now we're seeing Red Deer really loading up for next year. How much did the performances of Saskatoon and then last year London really scare some teams and make them say to themselves, "We don't want to be the Blades. We don't want to be the Knights. We don't want to happen to us what happened to these teams."
There's an immense amount of pressure when you go into that situation, starting from ownership on down, because you don't want to be embarrassed by, you know, by lack of success, and you definitely don't want to be a team that gets blown out in that situation. But, you know, it's at the end of the day, you can do all that you can do, and the games still have to be played on the ice. And the fact of the matter is, a lot of people could have looked at that London Knights team last year and said they were the best team there, maybe for Guelph, except for maybe Guelph. And you'd think that they should be playing for a title. Well, you know, that wasn't the case. And there's a lot of factors that come into play, you know, especially in London when they've gone 3 straight years and had that time off and a couple of guys thinking that they should have been in the NHL ahead of time. You know, there were a lot of different elements there. And Brent Sutter's doing his best due diligence now to kind of start the process and move forward. But you're right. I think it does scare teams. I mean, just wait till December 19th and see what else, if anything else, happens with the Quebec Remparts. And that's going to tell a big part of the story in terms of the question you're asking.
All right, that's the news and notes from the week. We'll pick up the conversation about the Top Prospects game. That roster announced today. Also, we'll get some thoughts on the World Junior Hockey Championships and what happens with Curtis Lazar. Some thoughts on the cuts as well. In the meantime, we'll take a quick break, come back with the head coach of the Kingston Frontenacs. You can watch them in action Friday on Friday Night Hockey as they face off against the Peterborough Petes. Head coach Paul McFarland joining Junior in moments.
I'm Stephen Weiss of the Detroit Red Wings, and I played for the Plymouth Whalers of the Ontario Hockey League.
You can watch the Kingston Frontenacs Friday on Friday Night Hockey, 7:30 start, as the Peterborough Petes facing off against the Fronts. Their head coach, Paul McFarland, joins us now. Paul, how are you today, sir? Thanks for doing this. On a game day, we should point out. Thanks for doing this.
No problem, guys. Glad to be here.
We really appreciate it. So a couple of years behind the bench as an assistant with the Oshawa Generals. How's it gone so far for you, Paul, first year behind the bench as a head coach with Kingston?
It's been great. I think, you know what, along with the help of John Goodwin, who's been around the league a long time, and obviously Doug Gilmore and Darren Kiley in management, they've all done a great job with the adjustment of being a head coach. And the players, more importantly, have been excellent and done everything we've asked as a coaching staff.
Good coaches are good coaches, but good players make even better coaches. What are we hearing on Sam Bennett, and what's the expected return for Sam?
I don't know at this point whether he'll be back in our league or obviously stay with the big club in Calgary. It sounds like middle of February he's going to be healthy enough to play again, and for Sam's sake, that's obviously great to hear that he's going to be back playing hockey, and obviously we'd open up our arms to him at any opportunity.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those situations where in a lot of ways, Paul, throughout the beginning of the season and in through December as well, you just have to keep operating as if, you know, and even in your own mind, think about it for the entire season, that we're not getting him, so don't make him part of the equation.
Yeah, I think as a coach, you know, all you can do is use the players that you have available to you, whether you're going to have injuries and suspensions, et cetera, that go out throughout the year, and you've got to make adjustments. And our younger players have gotten a great opportunity, especially the last couple of weeks, of getting a lot of ice time playing in all situations. So hopefully that makes us better long term.
So when you go back to being announced as the head coach there, what, how do you, like, I'm always fascinated in the process. So what's the first thing you do? You go and you set up your office. Do you make calls to players? I mean, how does it work out? Take us through the first week of your job.
I think the biggest thing for me was I wanted to communicate with all the players. I called and met with a few players individually and tried to reach out to everybody just to kind of give them some expectations on some keys for me that they can do, you know, taking care of themselves throughout the summer and preparing, the way that we were hoping they would so that we can play the right way. And also just to get to know them, I think, on an individual basis. You hear lots of things about different players in the league, but until you actually are coaching them and you get to know them on an individual basis, it's important for me to be able to relate to them all in different ways.
Let's talk about one of your key players, Lawson Crouse, who's still at junior camp, of course, for Team Canada. Your thoughts on him as a head coach? He's a highly regarded prospect. On Sportsnet, we have him in at number 4. One scout I talked to, I was telling Sam this a couple of seconds ago, one scout that I talked to today says you have him one too low. He should be in there right after Jack Eichel. From a coach's point of view, what's Lawson Crouse the player like?
He's an unbelievable kid. I think that's first and foremost. He works hard as anybody I've seen on a daily basis, and continues to want to get better and play a bigger role. I really don't know that there's anything he does poorly or he has any weakness at this stage. He's big body, he plays physical, he blocks shots, he protects pucks well below the goal line. He really plays a Western Conference NHL style right now.
When you look at Lawson Crouse and his chances to make Team Canada here for the World Junior Championships, how would you kind of assess his chances and why do you think he might have a shot?
Well, I think just based on how it's gone so far, he's a guy that really is going to do anything and everything to help the team win. And, you know, he'll be happy with any role that he's given. I don't think he's ever going to be a kid that's going to complain or sulk. He's a guy that brings a great attitude to the rink every day, and I think that's why he's put himself in this position. You look at even the Super Series game, he didn't play a whole lot until the third period, and then he kind of took off in that game, opening some eyes. So I think that's just kind of the kid he is. He doesn't taking anything for granted, and he's really excited, obviously, with the opportunity.
And sometimes when you look at big kids, whether actually big players in general, whether it's in junior hockey or in the NHL, sometimes when you see a big player, it can look like they're coasting or taking a shift off just by way of size and how a stride can almost seem lumbering. But it doesn't look that way with Lawson Crouse. Like, does he really work as hard as it appears each and every shift?
Yeah, I haven't seen him taking a shift off this year. I think he's always one of our hardest working players in every game, and he plays in all situations and plays a lot of minutes. For a big player, sometimes you can see in the third period or in our third game in 2.5 days, they sometimes fatigue a bit, and he doesn't do that at all. He just continues to push through, and maybe that goes with along with his mental toughness and how he just approaches every day the same, and I think he has high expectations for himself.
You know, nice dual purpose to have you on the show is to talk a little bit about your roots, your alumni roots in the Canadian Hockey League and with the Kitchener Rangers and the Ontario Hockey League. What did you take going back to your playing days that you've brought into your coaching?
I think the biggest things I took, obviously, I played for some great coaches in Kitchener and in Windsor, playing for Pete DeBoer and Steve Spott in Kitchener. The professionalism, the attention to detail, and, they pretty much every day approached us to try to train us to be pros, and they gave us every opportunity to do that. And I think me as a player, the one thing I can always remember is that you got to remember to put yourself in their shoes, and it's not easy being 16 or 17 years old, being away from home, new school, new teammates, away from your family. So I think especially through the tough times, you got to remember that as a coach and try to relate to these kids as much as possible.
What about the Memorial Cup run? That team was pretty special, whether it was, Derek Roy or Mike Richards or Andre Benoit and Evan McGrath. Like, that was a pretty stacked team. Tell us about that year. David Clarkson as well comes in from Belleville. Tell us about that team.
Yeah, it was a special group. And I think, you hear it all the time with teams that win, I guess, but everybody got along really well. And everyone bought into what their role was going to be,
whether you're a fourth liner or, you know, a guy that's on the top line playing in every situation. I think for me, even on that team, I was more than happy to, you know, be out there killing penalties, blocking shots, trying to win every shift that I was out there, and try to help the team win in any way possible. And every winning team needs that. It's important to, you know, over the course of the year, try to get that buy-in from each player.
Are there any stories, anecdotes that you use with your players now going back to that year?
I think a great example I was the same age as him, but you look at a guy like Mike Richards, who's won everything in hockey, really, World Juniors, Memorial Cup. You know, you want a Calder Cup, Stanley Cup, Olympic gold. He's a guy that just does everything right. And on a daily basis, he worked hard in practice. He stayed on to do extra. He wanted to continually, I guess, refine little parts of his game. And he wasn't a guy that scored 150 points in junior, but he did take over the big games and the big moments. And I think that's what you want to ask of your elite players is they have to rise to the occasion. And Mike definitely did that in any big situation.
Was always curious because the story used to be that when he was with Belleville and he wasn't getting a lot of ice time, he just wanted to quit and leave. And he went home and his dad said, well, if you want to quit, you have to call your grandfather up who served in the war and tell him you want to quit. He said, I can't call grandpa and tell him I want to quit hockey. He served in the war, for crying out loud. He said, okay, fine. You got to go back to junior then. And he gets traded to Kitchener, wins the Memorial Cup with you guys. Tell us a story about Dave Clarkson, the teammate, when you played with him in Kitchener.
Dave was a great story, I guess. You know, when he came as almost, we traded him for next to nothing. And he turned out being on our top line, I think, in the Memorial Cup, playing along with Derek Roy and Gregory Campbell. He was definitely a guy that liked to have fun in the room and pull some pranks on any individual possible. But when it came to the game, he'd stick up for anybody, and he played the game exceptionally hard, which he still does today.
We're going to bring it back into the here and now, though, after a trip down memory lane with the 2003 Kitchener Rangers MasterCard Memorial Cup winning team. And now to the Kingston Frontenacs. And it's been an issue over the last, well, as long as I can remember, that the goaltending situation has kind of been patchwork with overage guys and guys coming from other organizations. But it seems now you've really got it locked down with Lucas Parisini. Tell us about his year.
Yeah, he's had an exceptional year for us, I think. We try to do as good a job in front of him to limit, you know, the number of scoring chances and shots we give up on a nightly basis. But as of any team, you're going to give up chances, and he's come up huge for us on a number of different occasions. And I think he's a kid that believes in himself. You know what? Sometimes these goalies at 18, 19, they all of a sudden just click, and they start to believe that they've got what it takes to be a number one goalie. And he's done that.
A little bit about the Peterborough Petes as well. I know you weren't there last year when the Fronts went up 3-0, only to see it slip away and lose in seven, which was a remarkable series to watch. But how much does that motivate the guys that are on your team right now every time you play Peterborough? And we'll see another exchange on Friday.
Yeah, I think it's still a soft spot for a lot of the guys who were a part of it last year. You know, anytime you go through a series like that, it's tough to, I guess, recover from, and it's something they still are reminded of, even from us as a coaching staff, that something you got to think about every time you play them.
I want to just talk a little bit about your game preparation. What is it that you do leading up to a game with your group? I mean, if you start your week out and you've got it planned out maybe two or three games over the course of Wednesday through Sunday, how is it that you prepare your team for each and every game?
Well, for each game, you obviously you're going to make adjustments, whether, you know, based on how they forecheck or what they're doing off of face-offs. But as I remind our group on a regular basis, it's more about what we do than what they do. So we want to do the things that we do to the best of our ability. So I think throughout the week, you're constantly trying to get better in areas of your own game, whether it's, you know, your gap off the rush or cycling the puck, creating more offense. And then obviously when it comes to time to play, whether it's the Ottawa 67s or the Peterborough Petes, you've got to make little adjustments, and hopefully the team's able to execute those.
Who's been the biggest surprise on your roster for you this season?
I think there's been a few guys. Obviously, Lucas Parisini, you know, coming in and playing the minutes he's played and how well he's played, given those minutes. And then probably Jarkko Parikka as a 17-year-old Finnish defenseman, come all the way over, obviously, from Finland, and he's played top 4 minutes every single night for us. So he's played against top lines a number of different occasions and a great job against them.
Follow up on that as well, because he picked up two Finns. The other is a prospect for the Florida Panthers. That's Juho Lemikko. Your thoughts on the forward?
Yeah, he's done a good job. I think it's taken them a little bit of time to get acclimatized to the North American game, but he's gotten better with each month, and obviously he's going to be probably representing Finland at the World Juniors, so it's a great opportunity for him to play against that kind of competition, and hopefully he comes back with some confidence to take off in the second half.
Paul, does this time of year present any particular challenges going back to your experiences as an assistant with Oshawa, just because guys might start thinking about going home and the Christmas break and that sort of thing?
I think it's only natural. You remember as a player, as a kid, you're 16, 17 years old. You're excited to go see some old friends. You're excited to see family that you've been away from all year. I know even myself, I'm away from my wife and a little guy for most of the year. So I think it's only natural, but I think we've constantly kind of reminded our group that when you're at the rink, whether it be for a game or a practice, the 3-4 hours a day, you got to be 100% focused on what you're doing and trying to get better. And then obviously everyone can enjoy their Christmas break after the game on Friday night.
Paul, we'll end on this one, and we thank you for your time, and as we mentioned off the top, a busy one for you considering it's game day. At the gym where you and I go in the summer, you do the summer skates for a lot of the players at various ages as well. There's some school of thought that says, in the summer kids should be away from the rink and focus on another sport, whereas, you're leading guys in the gym, you're leading guys on the ice as well. What should a player be doing in the off season, both in the gym and on the ice?
I think this summer, my own opinion, and obviously everybody's got their own train of thought or what they believe, but the summer for me is a time to continue to work on your skills as an individual, whether it be your skating, little details in the game, puck protection, wall play, as a defenseman, your feet off the rush, and then obviously continue to get stronger in the gym and work on your weaknesses. Too many times I think the players want to work on things that they're great at, because it's a lot of fun to do, whether it's shooting 1,000 pucks because you have a great shot, or lifting heavy weights because you're a big, strong guy. I think my biggest piece of advice for guys in the summer is to figure out where your weaknesses are and do everything you can to try to improve in those areas.
Well, listen, we continue to watch you and the Kingston Frontenacs, and continue to watch that team improve. Thanks so much for stopping by today, Paul. Good luck tonight. Good luck Friday against the Peterborough Petes on Friday Night Hockey.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Steven Stamkos of the Tampa Bay Lightning. I played for the Sarnia Sting in the OHL.
Well, Sam, this is someone we've wanted to get on the podcast pretty much from week one. He is the director of hockey operations and scouting for the Moncton Wildcats, who come in at number 9 in this week's CHL rankings. He is Roger Shannon. You can follow him on Twitter at RogerShannon12, and he joins us on the Junior Podcast now. Roger, thanks for doing this. How are you today, sir?
I'm good, thanks, guys. Good.
Pleasure to have you aboard. Before we get specifically to your squad, the big thing around the NHL, certainly, and I would imagine teams in the CHL would be having a close look at this and testing their players. How much is mumps an issue right now for your squad?
Well, I was just saying, to the producer before we got started here, guys, that we live in a funny time right now in this world. There just seems to be so many things happening that are, I'll say, out of the ordinary, almost fringe events, and the mumps is one of them. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I had that when I was probably 10 years old, and it's one of the things that I remember well, the feeling of how it felt. And but as little as kids in my generation, we all had the mumps at one point, and it was a big thing. Now it seems like our kids are vaccinated, and nobody knows about mumps anymore. So this is like a new thing to this generation, and it's a little scary. I mean, I got 24 16 to 20 year olds all living together, traveling on buses, and when you think about it, I mean, it is a very infectious disease, and it only takes one. And yeah. I don't know. Does the vaccine not work? I mean, I have as many questions as you guys do.
Has there been a league directive at all from the Quebec Major Junior League offices to make sure that everyone's done their due diligence in this department?
Not at this point. We're going to be discussing this tomorrow, our staff. And then I'm thinking that pretty soon the league is probably going to get involved. It's probably something, that somebody's going to take an initiative or a lead on very quickly. And I think we have to. I went through H1N1 when I was with the Lewiston Maniac, Sam, and I remember that one very well. We actually had a couple players that ended up with it, and so it's a little bit similar.
All right, to play on the ice, Moncton Wildcats, as I mentioned, coming in at number 9 in this week's CHL rankings. Explain the position and explain the performance.
Well, I've been asked this a few times in the last few days, and the best way to put it is that we are a team that is really when you really look at it, probably full of chemistry. And I know it's a cliche that's used a lot. And sometimes I don't know that, people really grasp. I mean, every coach from the NHL right down to Pee Wee hockey uses chemistry, or whether it's the Blue Jays or the Rangers, it doesn't matter. And, you know what? I'm really learning, as time goes, more and more the significance of it. And that is what the Wildcats right now are built on, because we traded Chris Lalonde, we traded Vladimir Katchev. Mm-hmm. We replaced those guys with one guy in Taylor Burke, who is a full of chemistry, and Taylor Burke has made a big difference on our hockey team. And he does all the little things perfectly, and you can't have enough of those guys. So I couldn't be happier with what we're doing. And I was saying, to Sam earlier that tomorrow night will be a big test for us because we're missing 5 regulars from our lineup. Barbs is going to the World Junior with Team Russia, and it'll be another test. I mean, I think it was a test on Sunday night when they were down 5-0, 1 minute into the second period, and won it in overtime 6-5 with tying goal being shorthanded with 40 seconds to go. I mean, you couldn't script
that one's something else. I looked at that and I said, boy, some guys in Moncton ought to be going crazy right now. And probably the owner, maybe the most, and Robert Irving is a fascinating guy. Doesn't like the spotlight too much, Raj, but that win in particular, that just lit a spark in my mind to think, what about Robert Irving? How's that relationship, and what's it like to work for the man?
Well, I mean, he's, I'll say this, like, I haven't worked for anybody that's more passionate. And when I say passionate, I mean, it's no secret that Mr. Irving certainly he doesn't let a day go by where he doesn't talk to me about his hockey team. And, I'm sure he does that in the French fry business, in the transportation business, whether it's the tissue business. I mean, he is a passionate person. I mean, he gets as excited about transportation as he does about hockey. And so obviously that's part of the success. I mean, his success is driven by his persistence to pursue excellence. And that's what he wants from our hockey team at all times and all of the people involved. And he's very, very particular about, the image that our players portray in the public. Behavior. He's very particular about that because he's, we're representing the brand, and he treats that Wildcat logo like it's a brand that's significant as, his Cavendish Farms logo.
And of course, from one of the most, legendary families in the history of this country, how much interaction would he have with the players, I wonder?
as much as I do. For example, I mean, there's not a game goes by that if you've ever been in the Moncton Coliseum, and I know that certainly Sam has, where he sits, 4 feet from 4 feet from the coach,
yeah.
5 feet from the players, and his entire 3 periods of every hockey game, he is the biggest fan in the rink. He cheers loudly for every single play. He's a motivator, but his whole purpose is never negative, always positive, always encouraging the players to go hard, play 60 minutes, do whatever it takes. And then when the game is over and you're successful, and then he's in there thanking them and doing the rah-rah three cheers thing. So that's how much involvement he has. And he just recently in the road trip, he sat in the front seat of the bus.
Oh, isn't that wow. Something else? But you know, Rog, your story is quite interesting. I mean, we talked about Mr. Irving, but you've got quite the hockey history behind you. I mean, tell us a little bit about your background and your roots with UNB and the program you run there, the summer hockey, and some of the players. I think Jeff's going to be very surprised about some of the players that have come up through your system in the V-Reds program.
Yeah, well, I'm proud. Obviously, but everything that any success that I've ever had, in all fairness, has been because of the people that I've surrounded myself with. And I mean, I think that's really true of just about anybody. Is, you know, when you do surround yourself with good people. Really, my success started when Gardner McDougall took the job 15 years ago at UNB. I had a passion for hockey as a kid and played it and coached it and then coached it all through university, but I didn't have the same passion that he did. He buried that passion deep inside me, and then it helped a lot that we both had little fellas. So we just decided that we were going to start a program together, and we emulated it and called it from the UMB program, called it the V-Red Prospects. And we started that program, and it was really to try and give kids an opportunity. New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, PEI, I mean, it's a rare thing that we are able to put players in high levels. And I know that, the Sidney Crosbys and the Nathan McKinnons and stuff, but we just felt that there was a need for like a really highly specialized training. And so that's what we did. And it all started to kind of come together. And you know, I had the 92 age group because that was my son Zach's age, and I coached the team and took them all over the world. Spent a month in Sweden, Finland, and Germany back in 2007, and I had guys like Brandon Saad and Austin Watson, and just some really great kids. And then, of course, the V-Red, team of the 92s. We had eight boys drafted to the first round at the NHL. I can name them all pretty quickly. There's Gormley, Schwartz, Hayes, Austin Watson, Zach Phillips, Nathan Beaulieu. We had a lot of kids drafted high, and then there were 22 guys from that team that ended up being drafted to the NHL. A lot of them haven't played yet, but it's really a pleasure to watch some of them play. Like I watched Kevin Hayes play recently. But our biggest, I think our biggest thing is I think our biggest success has got to be my nephew, Jake Allen. I mean, Sammy, Jake, and you know how proud we are of him. And, Jake was original, and he's just having an outstanding season. So, and then, it's just a passion. You hang around people like Gardner long enough, he's going to rub off on you. And, he's a crazy guy. That's the best way to put it. I've never seen anybody so crazy about hockey as him.
Yeah, that's so true. That is so true. You know, we've spent some time with him at the University Cup, and it's amazing to see that the high energy he has, some of the thought processes he has. Really, he's not afraid to think outside the box and really looks at the game of hockey from an entirely different angle. And some people, almost like in a mad scientist kind of way, it's really fascinating. As Roger Shannon, the director of hockey ops, joins us from the Moncton Wildcats, but talking a little bit about your past and how things have come to be. You were also in Lewiston for a time.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved Lewiston, and I loved working for Mark Jeff. He's from Chicago. He's a former head scout, a World Series champion with the Baltimore Orioles. 1983, and not a lot of people know that, but Mark was a tremendous guy to work under, and he's given me some really good advice along the way. One I used today in a line in the media was some of the best trades you make are the ones you don't, and we're just kind of going through one of those right now with the Quebec Ramparts, where a trade kind of fell apart halfway through the trade, where some pieces went to Quebec, but then the rest of the trade can't be completed because of a very unfortunate incident last Wednesday night with Cody Donaghy, a signed player by the Leafs, and one of our guys hit him on the knee and I think put him out for the season. So it's I've been very lucky to be around good people, and Gardner probably is the guy that has done the most. I mean, we've won world championships and a bunch of national championships and a Memorial Cup, and been really lucky. Like, I mean, I've been fortunate, but when you get around good people, good things happen.
What was that Memorial Cup win like for you? Of course, I was with Shewinigan in 2012. It was remarkable, too, in that, you know, there was, as we all know, a lot of question marks when this team went out relatively early in the playoffs. What would Shewinigan do come tournament time?
Well, I mean, the big thing about the Memorial Cup for me was, and I've said this to a few people, and I mean, I guess I could go on record. I mean, you can't say for sure, but I think part of our success, the biggest part of our success was, is that we did go out a little bit early, and we knew we had the talent. Brandon Gormley was injured, and, that time off allowed our guys to recover. It was, you could almost say at one point, because we had so much talent, it was a little, we had an advantage. And the advantage was is that we were well rested when we got to Memorial Cup. It took us a little bit to get going. And then once we got going, we were good. And, I was lucky because I drug as many guys that had been with me to Shewinigan with me. And, you go with the guys that you trust and the guys you know really well. And we talked about that chemistry thing. I mean, I was a guy that took advantage of an opportunity. And I know that Kirill Kabanov was a guy that was a little bit questionable at times, but I brought KK in and brought in Brandon Gormley and Morgan Ellis and Michael Chaput and Pierre-Olivier Morin. And those were all guys that had been, you know, with me throughout different parts of their hockey career. And, and then Martin had done a great job of putting together some other pieces. And then we really did have a very talented hockey club. I think I counted it up the other day. We were doing a little study, and we had 11 first-round picks on that team from the Quebec Major Junior League. So we amassed quite a few good players. But the big thing was we had chemistry. And Bournes was a great leader. Michael Bournebel, who's a good player with the Montreal Canadiens, and he did a tremendous job, and it was just a great feeling. I mean, I don't know if you can have a better feeling. I always say that, you know, people who don't win like national championships or Memorial Cups or something like that, it's hard to understand that for 2 or 3 minutes you can actually act like a 5-year-old running around the ice hugging and kissing people, and you don't get that in life. I mean, I loved the day my children were born, but I didn't run around the hospital, hugging and kissing everybody and acting crazy. So listen. If I was to win the lotto Friday night, Sam, then I might run around, hug and kiss people.
I'll take the 50-50. Never mind the lottery.
Yeah. No kidding, eh? Yeah. So now it's good. It's all good. I've been very fortunate, guys, and hopefully there's more to come.
Well, Raj, we appreciate you taking the time today. The Moncton Wildcats just kind of keep on rolling along there, and it's a great place to go and see a game in a wonderful city that many people don't know about across the country. But once again, Raj, thanks for taking the time, and look forward to crossing paths with you here in the next month or so.
Very much so. Thanks, guys, and I do look forward to seeing you guys out there on the road. I know you're going to be doing a lot of games, Sam, you and RJ, and it's always fun when we get together, that's for sure.
You got it, Raj. Thanks.
All right, Raj, guys.
I'm Dwight King of the Los Angeles Kings, and I played in Lethbridge of the Western Hockey League.
Sam, we've heard about planes, trains, and automobiles. How about buses, buses, and more buses? Because that's what our next guest did on one of the legendary road trips across the prairies in the Western Hockey League. Gare Joyce from Sportsnet Magazine joins us. First of all, Gare, thanks so much for joining us today. And whose idea was it to put you on a bus and make you travel until you thought you would never get off that bus?
I hate to admit that I came up with the idea, and I live to regret it.
Well, both Jeff and I think it was... It's something I would love. I would really would love to do that. And I know you might have different thoughts after doing it, especially with one of the more traveled teams. But I don't know. I think it'd be kind of cool. How was the experience?
It was great. The team, the kids were just great to deal with. The management there, GM Russ Farwell, coach Steve Konowalczyk. They were very supportive. You know, I enjoyed the people. The ordeal, and that's what it is, is a little less enjoyable. And I think it really puts into perspective what these teams in the West go through. I mean, it's hard to imagine how you keep fresh legs.
Well, we really should frame this up properly. The road trip that we're talking about and the team that you are with is the Seattle Thunderbirds of the Western Hockey League. And, Garrett, for people that haven't read the piece, you started where and ended up where, and how many miles / kilometers did you log?
Well, you know how many kilometers it is. I don't know what it converts to in miles, but it's 5,700 kilometers.
Ooh. Wow.
And and I started in Seattle on November 4th. I took in a game with the Thunderbirds. They beat Red Deer in a shootout. And then they left at 7 a.m. the next day. Mm-hmm. And it was 2 days thereabouts. There certainly was 36 odd hours before they got to a practice rink just outside of Saskatoon. And then there were dates in Prince Albert and Saskatoon, Moose Jaw, Brandon, Regina, and winding up in Swift Current.
My goodness.
Yeah. And in the middle of that, there was the Subway Series. So there was a 2 day break. And during that break, the team spent a couple nights at an inn at Moose Mountain National Park. I can't even imagine that there's a Moose Mountain in Saskatchewan. But from there, we visited the home of Ethan Bear, the one defenseman who's pretty touted, draft eligible. He comes from Okapowasi, Cree Nation, just in southeast Saskatchewan. So we went there for a day, and they actually have an $18 million rink that they've built.
Really? Wow.
with no public money. And it's there isn't even a paved road to it. You have to go for 40 minutes on gravel roads to get to it. I have no idea how they built it. And so we spent a day there, and we also spent a day in Grenfell, Saskatchewan. Population 1,100, and I would guess maybe 200 people, 150 to 200 people came out to watch the team practice in Grenfell. And Grenfell is the hometown of one of the centermen, Donovan Nails.
That's really cool. I got to ask quickly here, Jeff, and sorry to interrupt, but on that road trip, Matthew, or just previous to it, Matthew Barzal gets hurt. It's come out now that it's common in public knowledge that he got hurt messing around in the dressing room before practice.
Yep.
Would you have been privy to that? And when I saw you at the Subway Super Series, were you privy to it at that time? And I guess that's part of when you're traveling with the team, that what some things have to stay within the team.
I knew.
Yeah.
In fact, there's detail of it in the story in the mag. And really, the management, Russ Farwell and Steve Konowalczyk, they said it is what it is. You know, we're not asking for any sort of embargo on this or non-disclosure.
Wow, that's...
Yeah, so I didn't go into great detail about the other player involved in it.
Okay.
Because, and I think Matt Barzal was... I think he was sheepish about it. But I think, you can't change the facts. And it was out there so fast.
Yeah.
I didn't broadcast it right away, but I was going to use it in my story. I thought, geez, it might be something that, breaks in my story if it can stay on the QT. But obviously, it was out there pretty fast.
Yeah, we talked to Steve. So we were in there on the Friday night, which was the 7th of November, for the Subway Super Series game. And the opportunity to watch, went to Prince Albert that night and watched Seattle there. And then Seattle then played in Saskatoon the next night. And so we wanted to stop in and say hello to Steve and the coaching staff there. And he was a little sheepish in describing it to us at that time as it happened in practice. So obviously you were privy to that. You were with the hockey club. Most relationships we have are with coaches are in that same vein where, hey, here's some stuff I can tell you that might explain something down the road. You just can't take the direct path to get to that final destination. And so that's obviously kind of how it worked out.
It's funny. I go two time zones away and I still can't shake you.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding.
I'm always curious about the dynamic within the room or in this situation on the bus with hockey players, and you talk about it in your piece of Sportsnet magazine as well. The dynamic between fresh-faced rookies, players that have million-dollar contracts in their hip pocket, players like, well, you guys just talking about Matthew Barzal a second ago, who are in their draft year hoping to get into the NHL. What's is there a totem pole amongst players? What's the dynamic between guys who are all at very distinct and separate positions in their hockey career?
It's a curious one. What we would think would be the pecking order isn't the pecking order that they go by. You know, a Matt Barzal who will play in the league or a Shea Theodore don't command as much of a place in the grand scheme as would Justin Hickman, an OA who's in his second year as captain with the Thunderbirds. Like, he is, he sits at the back of the bus, and the pecking order so is really sort of geographical in that way. But he is the absolute leader, and everyone defers to him. And even the most touted of the draft eligibles, even Theodore, who, I don't know if he could have stuck with Anaheim this year, but, you know, he's a major player, potentially a World Junior team guy. I mean, they all bow through to Hickman, who might be playing collegiate hockey next year.
Yeah, that's fascinating to me. And so there definitely are those things on the bus. The kind of the leader of the bus sits at the back.
Yeah.
Most comfortable place to be. Is that how it kind of shakes down, or the darkest so you can sleep? Or
I think it's to be farthest from earshot of the coach.
Okay. There we go.
it is funny. It is a seniority system. It's the OAs who have
rule the
real
roost.
Yeah, they have the sway.
Who, what's the bus like? I mean, I've been on Kelowna's bus. I've been on Moncton's bus. And you're talking about some money put into those things to allow players who travel long distances to have some of the comforts of home. What's the Seattle bus like?
Well, that Seattle bus retired after that trip.
Oh, okay. There you go.
And to tell you the truth, it was, we actually had to lose it for a day. When we were in Moose Jaw, it had to go in for servicing, and we ended up riding in a university bus for a day. But at one point, the heater didn't work.
Ooh.
for an afternoon, and it was -18 out.
Ooh.
And players had brought blankets to sleep, but mostly they were huddled under blankets. And funny thing is, we stopped. We stopped in Regina at a mall for lunch, and I went to a discount store in the mall, and I didn't bring a blanket. I was sitting there, freezing my butt off, and this place was selling blankets, right? And it was NFL blankets, and they were knocked down to $30, but the Raiders were $25. So I picked up a Raiders blanket.
Al Davis just rolled over.
Yeah, but anyways, there was a couple times where the bus was extremely cold. We had a Bakke heater. And then later in the trip, the heater got jammed, and it couldn't be turned off. And so all the players were stripped down. Like, they had their shirts off and were walking around in their underwear. It was so hot.
Really?
Yeah, it was. We went the full range of climate zones, both geographically and on the bus.
So it was a shade better than a school bus?
No, it was a good bus, yeah. But it was talking to the driver, and it hit the 300,000 mile mark, and that's where they retire the buses.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, just for safety reasons. So, internet on there? Wireless internet?
Supposed to be. It wasn't working.
Okay.
Yeah, they managed finally to get the DVD player working.
Yeah.
But yeah, no wireless was a handicap for the guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's homework, whatever, research, all that sort of stuff, right?
Yeah.
But entertainment and connecting with family, that sort of stuff.
The homework time set aside, if they do it on the bus, good for them. But there is an assigned time for players to sit down. And they do it as a group, and they're supervised. And the travel secretary oversees it. And, to tell you the truth, these guys sleep so much. I don't know what the internet would mean to them. I mean, it's incredible. They can get on a bus, and within 5 minutes, right, they are out cold. And they'll sleep absolutely anywhere. Like we were talking about the pecking order, the veteran guys get the floor. Like they stretch out in the aisle.
Really?
Yeah. And so they get the preferred sleeping positions. The rookies have to sit side by each, and I think they work out an order so that the biggest guy will sit with the smallest guy among the rookies.
Yeah.
You know, just it's a practical consideration. Their ability to sleep just staggered me. I was thinking, well, you know, I'll be able to conduct interviews on the road. I was like, these guys are all asleep. You know, I could talk to the coaches or something like that. But I'm the worst for anything like that. I mean, I was sitting there bolt upright when we're rolling into Regina at 3 a.m. You know, after a game. 5 minutes after they played in Brandon and had a quick meal, they're on the road to Regina, and they're all asleep. They couldn't have slept any sounder in their own beds. Yeah, but I mean, you're pretty legless when you're checking into a hotel at 3 o'clock and you got a game the next day.
How, you know, you mentioned eating. How tough is it for these guys to eat properly, knowing how they take care of themselves in the gym, how they, you know, continually measure themselves by way of fitness? I was talking to a mother of an OHL player 2 days ago at the gym who said that her son had to finally switch billets because he couldn't get a proper meal. There was nothing green in the fridge. And I wonder about these long road trips. How tough is it for these guys to eat properly?
Well, it's a great question. I don't know really how well you can hit the mark on the road, no matter what you do, in terms of eating. The schedule of meals is all set in advance, and you know reservations are made for a series of restaurants, and there's something green, and there's protein, a pretty decent mix is on order. You know, these guys are going in at 10:30 at night after a game and hoovering down a quick meal. They do their best, but I it's not like being at home. It's not a control situation. And I think that's really one of the points that I tried to make in the story. You can plan things, but something's always going to go wrong, and something's not going to be up to snuff. And it's not a control situation. It's like a conspiracy of circumstances.
So yeah, we're with Garrett Joyce. Has a piece in Sportsnet, the magazine, about a road trip he had taken with the Seattle Thunderbirds of the Western Hockey League. So an interesting group in and of itself. I have talked to Steve Konowalczuk, the head coach there, on a couple of different occasions, but finally got the opportunity to meet him there in Saskatoon. What were your impressions of Steve?
Well, I think he's an outstanding hockey man. I had met him when he was doing some scouting a few years previous to that, just very quickly. I'm sure that I dealt with him once or twice as a player. He's very invested in it. I don't know if he sees himself coaching in the NHL someday. I think he's locked in for a couple more years in Seattle. I know he signed an extension. you know, and I think he has a comfort zone there. I think he's an excellent teacher. I know Russ Farwell has a lot of belief in him. Mm-hmm. You know, this year Seattle's right on the bubble for making the playoffs. They should, but everyone knows it's a young team rebuilding, and they could be a force in a couple seasons' time. And Steve will be there in a couple seasons' time.
So, Gary, you come off this trip, and
thank God.
What's next now in terms of, you know, in relating the CHL to the magazine? It's been great to have someone kind of on the inside like that, and you know, everyone talks about multi-platform and that sort of thing. But what can we expect from you CHL related coming up?
Well, I will be going to World Juniors up in Montreal on Boxing Day. And throwing my lot in with that for the duration, coming back to Toronto for the medal round. In the new year, there's a couple of junior stories that I'm looking at. Certainly, there will be more in the run up to the Memorial Cup. I'm sure that we'll be doing more about McDavid and Eichel down the line. I mean. It's the elephant in the room. You can do other stories, but that's the story this season.
Yeah,
and it's one of those things that I have plans, and it's like that road trip. You know, circumstances conspire against you. My plans could change tomorrow.
Right, I got you. Well, World Juniors, we can look forward to that. So
I am looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an awesome tournament. The world is really like an accordion. It's kind of closed accordion right now. It's that close between nations. But Garrett Joyce, thanks for your time. Thanks for stopping by and joining us here on Junior.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Garrett.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Dion Phaneuf of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I played my junior hockey for the Red Deer Rebels of the Western Hockey League.
Sammy, as we wrap up another edition of Junior CHL Podcast, let's go through the CHL Top 10. For week 13, Oshawa remains there at number 1, Kelowna and Rimouski, so no change there. Sault Ste. Marie and Brandon, although don't look now, Regina just beat them again. The Erie Otters, Medicine Hat Tigers, St. John Sea Dogs, Moncton, we talked to their director of hockey operations earlier on in this podcast, and Everett's, the Silvertips, round out the top 10. Any surprises there for you?
Yeah, Moncton has to be a bit of a surprise. I mean, you talk about trading Christophe Lalonde and Vladimir Kachev, I think two of their top 4 or 5 scorers at the time. You know, and then Roger Shannon touched on chemistry. So if you read between the lines there, it tells you a little bit about what they thought of both Lalonde and Kachev. And, you know, they haven't missed a beat, and here they are ranked. And then, you know, Everett, Kevin Constantine, great market. Jeff, I don't know if you've ever been to a game there. If you get the opportunity, go to Everett and watch a game. It is an experience like few other I've seen in watching hockey, especially when, you know, the games are meaningful, it's getting late, and they got a good rival in there, like Vancouver, Seattle, awesome place to
I had friends that used to work for the organization, which was the first time anyone ever told me about Radko Gudas, who's the closest player to Leo Boivin, I think, that we had seen come through junior or through the NHL. I remember getting a note from someone saying, I don't know much about this kid, but you should see this Gudas kid play. He is destroying guys out here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Kyle Beach played there, you know, Zach Hamill. They've had some really good players go through there. And now Kevin Constantine back in his second stint, doing pretty good. But you look at the fringes too. Regina there as they were last week. You'd have to think if they keep playing well, they're going to debut next week. The London Knights are there, really playing some good hockey right now without Max Domi. And then Blainville, Bois Brienne, still kind of finding a way to make it work. That one is... still remains a bit of a mystery to me, and we'll see where they are on the trade front on December 19th. So a couple of little good little bits and pieces there.
Yes, indeed. Okay, let's get to the 2015 BMO CHL-NHL Top Prospects Game roster. There is one surprise slash omission to me, and it might just be because he was injured to start the season, but that would make me want to see him more in a peer-on-peer situation, the likes of which we'll see in St. Catharines. Are you as surprised as I am that Travis Dermott isn't on this list?
Yeah, that one is. That would probably be the guy that sticks out to me most from this group. And it's funny because you get so locked in on who's there that at times you forget about, you know, the omissions. But that would be one glaring omission for sure. But, you know, Jeff, like in my years of doing this thing, the one thing I'll say is that there tends to be anywhere from 2 to 4 changes to the roster.
Sure.
And that all really has to do with injury. And I don't think this year will be any different. That same sort of thing will likely happen, and then Travis Dermott may or not be included. So we hope to, on podcast future, to have Danny Marr on, the head of NHL Central Scouting. But there is definitely a process to this and to the teams and how they're picked. Dan will do a wonderful job in explaining to that, and it was explained to me last year. But basically, the players that are selected to play in this game go on a big master list, and they're all submitted by National Hockey League teams. I'm not sure about the participation rate of NHL teams, but you'd have to think that it wouldn't take much for a team to submit its list, and then they go through the list, and players get numbered. And as a player is injured, they go down to the next player on the list. So while many people might look and say, here's an omission, the fact of the matter is, this is done for NHL Central Scouting for NHL teams, and mm-hmm. ultimately, that's who makes the decision as to who is selected and who's not.
Yeah, and injuries will be a factor, so don't be surprised if by the time January 22nd rolls around, the Erie defenseman Travis Dermott is actually on this list somewhere down there. Are there one or two players you're really curious to see in this situation? For me, it's Jake DeBrusk, the Swift Current Broncos, son of former NHLer Louis DeBrusk. He does work with us at Sportsnet, as we all know. I haven't seen a lot of them. But the more that I hear about him, and it's not just his dad telling me this, by the way, I'm offset at Sportsnet, the more there is to like about this kid. So I'm really curious to see Jake DeBrusk play, because he's kind of in that group of players that could jump up into the bottom end of the first round or slide down to the high end of the second round. Jake DeBrusk is my guy. How about you, Sam?
Yeah. Okay. So if I'm picking just one guy, then Jensen Harkins would be that guy for me out of Prince George. Similar situation, you know, father played in the National Hockey League's father's mm-hmm. the general manager there. But he too is on that kind of steady rise. And I think he's going to end up as a first round guy. I look at some of these players that I've watched, and I'm going to take liberty here to name a couple more guys. Jeremy Waugh is a guy I've been dying to see. He was hurt in the Subway Super Series, defenseman out of Sherbrooke.
Yep.
And the other guy that really fascinates me that I've had some conversations about is Philip Schlappick out of Charlottetown.
Love him.
Who's had a nice rise, too. So those would be a couple of names that I'm interested in seeing.
It's funny. Talked to someone really early this season in Charlottetown who said, this kid is better than Daniel Sprong. I know everyone's going mm-hmm. crazy for Sprong. He said, watch a Schlappick kid. He's going to make noise, and don't be surprised if he ends up jumping over another Islander in Daniel Sprong when the final rankings come out before the draft. What about Ivan Provorov? Brandon Weekings, the defenseman who seems to be rocketing up every time there's a new list. I mean, he looks like the real deal too, Sam.
He plays a pro game, Jeff. He really plays a pro game in terms of, you know, being back really hard on puck retrieval, so that gives him a little bit of extra time to make decisions. Decision-making is really good. Can run a power play for you, can play horse-type minutes, you know, upwards of 25 a game if called upon. I really, really like him. Shoots the puck well, distributes well. I can see why he's had a steady rise.
You know, there are some players in a game like this that this game can do nothing good for, and Connor McDavid certainly leads that campaign. I don't know how much more Connor McDavid can do to cement a number one overall draft position, but there are some players that this game could really, you know, help turn some heads, and I wonder about a player like Nick Merkley, who not everybody has in their top 10, although he is really banging the drum strong in the Western Hockey League with the number 2 ranked team in the country, the Kelowna Rockets. Are there a couple of guys that for you, Sam, can really do themselves some good? Maybe Travis Konecny, who hasn't had the best of seasons so far. Is there a guy or two out there that you think can really help himself come January 22nd?
Brandon Carlo, defenseman out of Tri-City. Loved him last year, and people are starting to talk about this guy a lot more as well, but he plays in a market that at times makes it difficult for scouts to see him. And I think in this group, just to see how he acquits himself in this group, that would be one guy for me. That's on Team Cherry, which would be Kiprios's team. And if I pick a guy out of Team Orr's camp, just quickly looking down the list, it would have to be Timo Meier out of the Halifax Mooseheads. He's another mm-hmm. guy that people are really starting to talk about. I was in touch with their coaching staff last week, and they couldn't say enough good about him. So those would be my one guy from each team.
All right, that game, of course, broadcast on Sportsnet, the BMO's NHL, CHL-NHL Top Prospects game this year in St. Catharines on January the 22nd. That is a Thursday at the Meridian Center, Sam. And I think we mentioned this on the podcast last week. Just a gorgeous new facility, isn't it?
Yeah, it's dynamite. I was in there yesterday for the World Junior practice. So, yep, they're all set there. And, you know, the owners, Denise and Billy Burke, they're really excited about getting things going there. They got one of their own in Vince Dunn. Real fun watching.
That's right.
Fun moving, puck moving defenseman. So it'll be fun to watch him to get the home crowd involved. Then you got everybody else. So, yeah, it's going to be cool. I'm looking forward to it too. It's one of the top events for us, for RJ and Faldy and I to do in the year, just because you can go in there and really get hunkered down and spend a lot of time with these guys. You know, some of them will get in there as early as Monday night. Others will get there Tuesday, and then you'll have Tuesday, Wednesday, and you know, the morning skate on Thursday to really familiarize yourself with these guys. So looking forward to it.
Should be a lot of fun. Graham Knott as well from the Ice Dogs involved.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, forgot about
playing
him.
On Team Cherry as well. Sam, another fun edition of Junior. Thanks, as always, for your contributions and your expertise. We'll see you again on television the next time you and I will chat on Friday. The Kingston Frontenacs facing off against the Peterborough Petes. That is our matchup on Friday Night Hockey. And don't forget, come January, we will add a second CHL game to our Sportsnet mix.
Awesome.
First game going. Yeah, I know it's going to be a lot of fun in the second week of January. So more junior hockey coming your way.
Hey, on behalf of
Jeffy? Yes. Yes, sir.
The what to win. Hashtag what to win.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So just promoting the CHL campaign. Hashtag what to win. I'm not big on the hashtags. I'm not a huge Twitter guy. You might be able to explain that a little better. But
we'll get you there. We'll get you there, Sam. We'll get you there.
Videos, self-shot videos, from what I understand, you know, skill sets and what it takes for CHL players to win. Keep an eye out for that campaign. Really looking forward to a January push right up to the MasterCard Memorial Cup, and it starts with hashtag what to win, right?
Yeah, a couple. Yep, that's right. And I tweeted out a couple of them earlier on today, Sam. Nice. One involving Justin Bailey doing target practice. The other involving Max Domi doing one-timers and slap shots. So a little look at the skill development from your favorite CHL players across the league, from the Western Hockey League, the O, and the QMJHL. On behalf of Sam and our producer, Matt Brown, thanks so much for stopping by today. Thanks to all of our guests as well. And by the way, Sam, you were bang on the money. I mean, of course, Garrett Joyce is fantastic. We want to thank Paul McFarland, the head coach of the Kingston Frontenacs. But Roger Shannon, that was my first chance to talk to Roger.
Oh, he's a beauty.
Isn't he, though?
Yep, fantastic.
Real nice guy. And I can imagine that with every pour, more stories come out. So we look forward to catching up with Roger Shannon somewhere down the road. On behalf of Sam and Matt, I'm Jeff Merrick signing off. Thanks for joining us on another edition of Junior. We're back next Wednesday.